Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Jeff Zimmerman. He is a professor at Iowa State University. Great to see you again, Jeff.
Thank you.
You know, I see two trends developing in the pork industry. One is there's been a push toward what some people call individual pig care. They're getting away from mass medicating animals, they're spending more time in the barns, they're pulling the pigs that are struggling, they're treating the ones that need help. But it seems like in the world of diagnostics, it's going in the other direction. You have a lot of population-based diagnostics going on right now, don't you?
Exactly. And there's a reason for that. It's a very logical reason, and that is the kind of population diagnostics we were using in the 80s and 90s don't apply very well in our larger populations. And by that I mean as we get bigger systems, more buildings, more pens, the 30 samples doesn't work anymore.
10 years ago, individual pig samples accounted for 52% of the samples, and now they've plummeted to about 22%.
Sure.
And likewise, you're seeing a big increase in the processing fluids and
sure.
also the oral fluids.
It's completely logical. The thing is that with our tests, we've been able to adapt our tests so that we can use these aggregate samples, oral fluids, for example, or processing fluids. We can have very good detection rates. We can have very good diagnostic sensitivity and diagnostic specificity. So with less work, our producers can do better surveillance. And I think for the industry today, we need good surveillance so that people understand what infectious agents are circulating in their populations and they can respond correctly.
And I would think too that if you're, let's say if there's a very low level of PRRS in the herd, for example, if you're just taking blood samples, you could easily get a false negative.
Yes, that's exactly right. This phenomenon of low prevalence PRRS is something we hadn't really anticipated, but it's becoming a widely recognized fact. And that is PRRS existing at prevalence 5% or less in our herds. And so, yes, when you start trying to collect individual samples to detect that level of prevalence, it takes a lot of testing.
So I guess the one question is, though, if whether it be with processing fluids or with oral fluids, where do you draw the line? How many samples can you take and put them in the same bucket to get a real accurate reading as to what's going on in that particular population?
Right. So we're getting better and better feel for how many negatives you can pull with one positive or add to one positive before you start losing detection. We're getting better estimates on that. Part of what drives that is how important the correct answer is to the producer. So, in other words, what level of false negatives can you actually tolerate in your system? You know, how can you tolerate losing that positive sample when you can offset it with a lower cost of testing? I think we're still feeling our way forward to that. That's one part of the equation. Another part of the equation is how frequently do you sample? And so those are the kind of the dynamics we're working with now. And I think the industry is finding its way to the right balance.
And it's a lot less labor intensive, isn't it?
Correct.
So I think most of your work so far has been with PRRS, is that right?
We've done a lot of work with PRRS, and we continue to do a lot of more work with PRRS because we think we can continue to improve our testing algorithms as well as our assays. So there's more work to be done with PRRS, especially as we get into this low prevalence situation. But we've actually done work with African swine fever, with foot and mouth, with influenza, pretty much as nearly every pathogen you can name.
And how do you go about doing that? I mean, in terms of African swine fever, because we don't have it in the country.
We can use some of the molecular technology to create vaccines that will produce the antibody response we're looking for. So, for example, there's an antigen P30 in African swine fever, which is important in diagnostics. So we can actually create a vaccine that will just produce a P30 antibody. So we don't have to work with the pathogen. And we've done that. We've got some work done on that.
So, I mean, certainly we're at kind of a high alert status right now with
yeah.
not just African swine fever, but there are other foreign animal disease
right.
Threats that are out there. Where do you see this population-based diagnostics you know, working from a practical standpoint in guarding the U.S. pork industry against these diseases?
If you were to look at it, I think there's no other way for us to be prepared for foreign animal diseases except by having oral fluid-based assays ready to go. There's no way that we have enough people in the field to collect all the samples we'd have to collect. We'd have to, at the moment we have that first positive detection, we need to be ready to be able to sample lots of herds, but we need these aggregate samples because every aggregate sample represents dozens of individual pig bleeding samples.
Are you recommending that producers and veterinarians actively be using these population diagnostics on all herds for not just PRRS, but some of these other bugs?
So you have to be careful because a lot of these assays are, they belong in a way, they belong to USDA. So we can't, just because we want to, we can't run African swine fever or foot and mouth or classical swine fever assays. Those are strictly the purview of the USDA. But we can help USDA get ready by developing our side, which we do the test development. That's one thing we can do. The other thing we work on is surveillance. How do you collect these samples in a strategic fashion so that you're most likely to detect the pathogen? So we work on literally assay development and then the sampling methods.
So what's the next step with your research?
I think really we will continue to work on assay development. There's plenty of room for improvement. But actually the more challenging part is this surveillance of how do you apply these in a field. So what we've learned so far is that, you know, historically going back to the pseudorabies eradication project, for example, we did random sampling. And the classic number was you collect 30 randomly selected pigs, right? Bleed those animals and test them. We know very well now that 30 is no longer the right number. But the other thing we've learned is that these pathogens move spatially. And if you think about it, in a barn, if you have an infected pen, the pens that are going to get infected next are the neighbors, and it's going to move in a spatial fashion. The assumption for random sampling is that the target is random. We know that's no longer the case. And so we need to revamp, reevaluate our sampling strategy. And so we've been working a lot on trying to do that. And you're more likely to detect it with fixed spatial sampling than random sampling. So we need to keep pushing that idea, testing it. So that's at a barn level. How about at a site level or a county level or a state level? We think we can work through some of the problems, but they're challenging.
Well, it's been said that there's power in numbers, and it seems like the approach you're taking with diagnostics is certainly consistent with that.
Right, right. But you still have to have the right numbers, and you have to interpret them correctly.
Okay. Well, we'll be keeping a close eye on it.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Jeff Zimmerman. He is a professor at Iowa State University. Best of luck with everything.